Looking at the Mishnah now in Daf Kuf Hey Amud Beis, and the Mishnah says Hakorea Bechamoso V'Almeso. So we have two categories here, two cases, I should say. One is Bechamoso, and the other is Almeso. In both cases, he did a Maisa Kriya. Kriya is one of the Lamites Molochos. And in the first case, he ripped his garment out of anger. In the second case, he ripped his garment on the occasion of the death of someone. We don't know exactly who that someone is. The language meso, which is in the possessive, his mace, sounds like we're talking about a case of what? What would you say is meso? You know, it's not, it could have said al mace on someone who died, but it says meso. What do you understand from meso, the possessive? Krovav, yeah. Echad mi krovav. So that would be possibly one way of interpreting the Mishnah. Another way of interpreting the Mishnah would be al meso, as opposed to the death of an Adam Kosher. It's a relative. It's not a person who died and he has no relationship to him, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it was one of the seven Krovim who have a very intense relationship such that he's Chayiv in Kriya. So we don't know. Again, there are three categories, basically. There's an Adam Kosher, you know, a Jew that dies. I don't have any relationship to him. I may not have known him. There's another case.
Why would that be Meso?
Well, Lechora, that's not Meso, right? And that Lechora, that's the Mishnah adds the word Meso to exclude at least that category. But then we have two other categories. We have Krovim, relatives, and then we have the Zion Krovim. So, for example, first cousin could be Meso, but it's not a Chiv Kriya, because the Chiv Kriya is limited to the Zion Krovim, which are listed in what parasha in the Torah? Who remembers where in the Torah I would look for this list of the Zion Krovim? The seven close relatives that generate a Chiv Kriya. That's in Parshas Emor. What's the beginning of Parshas Emor? Who remembers? Emor El Ha Kohanim. So we want to tell the Kohanim under what circumstances they're allowed to contaminate themselves to the dead, and there the Torah lists the seven Krovim. Now, one of the questions we're going to have to raise here is, why did the Mishnah bother with these two cases? Why does it say HaKorea B'chamaso and then HaKorea Al-Meso? Are they fundamentally different? Does each one have its own chiddush? That's what we're going to have to address. Then the Mishnah says V'chol HaMakalkalin, because again, in the first two cases, which are specific scenarios, the Mishnah doesn't tell you exactly what the din is. We assume that when did this incident take place from the Masechta that this Mishnah is placed in? Don't all answer once. I mean, well, when did it take place? On Shabbos. Again, you wonder why a person would have ripped a garment on Shabbos, seeing that Korea is one of the 39 Molochos. That was not a very smart thing to do. But the question now becomes, is he chayav or is he potter? Now, when I say chayav, I mean the following. Number one, if he was a shogeg, then he brings what? A karban chatos. Number two, if he was mazid, if there was hasra and two edim, then he gets what? Anybody know? What's the punishment? Skila. And if there was no hasra, then he's chayav kares. If it was shogeg, it's a chatos. If it was mezid, it's either a chiv kares or a chiv misa. And if he's potur, that would seem to mean that he's potur from everything. Meaning, he doesn't bring a karban chatos if he was a shogeg, and he certainly is not chiv kares or misa if he was a mezid. Because he's potur. Now the question is, why is he potur? If it was on Shabbos, he violated one of the 39 malachas. Why is he potter? So the Mishnah, instead of giving you an answer to that question, it takes the two specific scenarios and offers us what I call a klal. And what is that klal? V'chol amakalkal in pturim. Now, how do I know that this klal is including the first two cases? I know it from two indications. Number one, from the vav, v'chal hamakalkalin, and also from the word kal, meaning and all. So I've given you two specific scenarios, and all that fit into the following overarching principle, and that's called mekalkalin. Now, how would you translate the word mekalkalin, just that we're on the same page?
Wrecking
things. Any other words come
Ruining.
To mind? Ruining things.
Damage.
Damaging things. Excellent. Anything else?
Destruction.
Destruction. Excellent. Destruction. That would be my favorite word, destruction. Why do I like the word destruction? Because the essence of Shabbos is not to involve yourself in, what's the opposite of destruction? Construction. So I like constructive and destructive. But again, there's no, when you translate the words, it always gives you a problem, because no translation into any language is perfectly accurate.
Wait, that's the last question.
Go ahead.
Does it not strike me?
No, now's a good time to ask questions. Yeah.
I was just wondering about the Lashon of the Mishnah. It says, Koreh b'chamoso al-meso. If it just wanted to say someone who rips his garment on his red, let's just say it on his mace, it could have just said, Koreh b'chamoso al-meso. Why the?
So the Vav here is what's called a Vav HaMachalik.
Okay.
We know what a Vav HaMachalik is?
Right.
Okay. A Vav HaMachalik is the same as an O, Aleph Vav. So the word vav could either mean this and this together, or it could mean this or this, and that's called a vav hamachalik. So there's a vav hamachaber, which means x plus y, and then there's a vav hamachalik, which means x or y. In the Lashon HaMishnah, the Mishnah very often uses a vav hamachalik. Okay, and if we had time, not now, but we would study exactly what are the cues, what are the clues, when do we see the vav as a vav hamachalik and vav hamachaber? Here it's clearly a vav hamachalik. And that's going to lead us back to our other question, why the Mishnah felt compelled to give us both cases. Number one, korea b'chamoso. Number two, korea al-meso. Which of the two, by the way, just, I don't know, everybody will have a different answer to this question, but maybe you'll come up with my answer, I don't know. Which would you say, just as a knee-jerk response, is a bigger chiddush? In other words, there's more of a hamina to say that he should be chayev in this case, because it's not a makalkel. Which of the two?
Vav HaMachalik.
No, but I'm asking, you have two cases. They have the Vav HaMachalik, right? You have case number one, which is a person who's angry and he rips his begadim to shreds. Then you have another case of a person who never lost one of his relatives and he does kriya. Yeah, we're not sure what relative it is. It says meso, but let's say for argument's sake it's one of his Zion Krovim. Then in the context of his Avelus for Zion Krovim, he's chayv in what?
Kriya.
So would that make it into a what? What's the opposite of Mekalkel?
Mitaken,
right, Mitaken. The Rebbe said, I'm going to use Havara Ashkenazis. If it bothers you, if it irritates, just let me know. I have no problem using Havara Sfaradit. You know, when I was in the army for 13 years, that's what I did. I did Havara Sfaradit. But anyway, yeah, go ahead.
So if someone's tearing their clothes out of anger, the Gemara considers them insane, correct? Would that alleviate any...
He's not totally insane. I mean, again, I'm not going to suspect Svi that you would have done such a thing, because you're a very rational person.
I have my moments of rationality.
Okay, but there are people who rip things. Today they have different things to get rid of your anger. They have these cubes, and they have, different things. Modern psychology is inventing all these. Back in the day, they were a little bit more simple about it, and when they were really angry, they just either banged the table until it broke. It wasn't a karate chop, or maybe they ripped their things.
People break things.
Absolutely.
Most common is slam a door when you're real mad.
Yeah. Yeah. And the psychologists have written books about this, about, what different actions people do out of anger. And it could get really insane, like you say, but it doesn't mean we've crossed the insanity line here. We're still talking about someone who's working with all his marbles, but on the other hand, he's angry. There doesn't seem to be, if you look at the act of kriya, as a halachic act, there doesn't seem to be much constructive benefit to ripping your garment out of anger, although it might be psychologically helpful. But in terms of the constructive versus destructive element here, it's pretty destructive. Sometimes a person can destroy something and gain benefit from it. But what would you say about the case of Kri al Mesa? Why would I think Salka Daita Chamina? I would have said that here it's constructive. Why is it constructive? Exactly, the Chiv Mitzvah makes it constructive. So that's why I say that the second case, this is what you call Lozu El Afzu, meaning I don't have to tell you in the case of Korea Mechamasa, that's certainly Makalkil, because the act itself is destructive. But once the Torah commands me to do a destructive act, I wouldn't call that destructive. You know, if I wasn't afraid about political correctness, I would say that if you kill the enemy, that's not an act of destruction. The Torah commands you to kill your enemy. You know, some people today are very liberal and they think that any killing has to be prohibited. You know, they're pacifists. But I don't necessarily belong to that camp, but, you know, whatever it is. So, v'chol ha'makalkalin p'turin. So again, we translated the word makalkalin as those who do violate one of the 39 malachas, or more than one, in a destructive way. Number two, we said that the word p'turin means potter completely. In Yiddish we say in Gansen potter, straight across the board. He doesn't bring a karbon if he's a shogeg, he's not chayev kares if he's amazed, he's not chayev misa if he's amazed. He fits under the category of what? Makalkel. Now, Rabosa, I want you to make a note of the following question. We're not ready for it now, but I want you to think about it, because maybe during Chavrusa time, you might have an answer to this question. Are there any malachos on the list of 39, which you'll find in Daf Ayin Gimel in Shabbos, that are by their very essence, makalkel? The whole essence of the malacha is makalkel. Okay then, so again, I don't want to get into this now, I just want to sort of, you know, get your brainwaves moving here, you know, open up the neurons and have you think about it. Okay, fine. Now, the next part of the Mishnah is way, way beyond us. It's very complicated, but let me just read it, translate it, and we go on, okay? Because I want to get to the Gemara, that's our subject for today. The Mishnah says, Hamakalkel, Hal Menas L'Saken, what happens if he wants to prepare for another malacha, but he can only prepare the way for that malacha if he destroys the first malacha? So follow what you have. You have A and then B. A comes first, sequentially, and then B second. A is destructive, B is constructive. But A is necessary to prepare for B. Okay, now there are a lot of different cases in the Mishnah. I'll give you the following example. Let's say there's a malacha called mechika. What does mechika mean?
Erasing.
And what comes after mechika? Ksiva, right. So what happens if he erases letters that are bothering him for whatever reason, and he wants to replace them in the same parchment with letters that are constructive, that are beneficial? So now we have a case of mochek al menas lichtov, and then the mechika becomes a preparation for the ksiva. Now every malacha has a shir. A shir means the minimal amount that he has to do. In the case of ksiva, the minimum shear is 2 osios. So how many osios do you guess I would have to erase in order to be chayiv for mechika?
2 osios.
And that's exactly what the Mishnah wants to say. That hamakalka al-manas letakein, if I destroy something in order to, as a preliminary, in order to set the stage for the positive and constructive malach that comes afterwards, shi'uro kimesakein. That the same shear that applies to the second malacha, we called it malacha B, which is the tikkun, applies now, we'll call it the transmutation law, and we transmute it to malacha A. So malacha A picks up the same shear as malacha B, insofar as malacha A prepares for malacha B. I'll give you another example. Let's say I have 2 stitches that are crooked, zigzag. So what do I do in order to restitch them? I got to rip them apart. That's called korea, but korea is destructive. But the answer is it's al menas l'saken. Now the shear from aleches tofer is 2 tefiros, two stitches. So what would by definition therefore be the shear for korea? Would be 2 stitches, meaning I have to rip 2 stitches in order to replace them with 2 proper stitches. Now let's say a person got a warning. No, okay, let's leave out warning because that's going to give us a skila, so that's not really relevant to us. Let's say he didn't have a warning, so he did it for shogeg, right? He forgot it was Shabbos, and he did korea and mochek. How many karbonos chatos would he have to bring in such a case? two, because he violated two malachas. Are you with me on that?
Yeah.
Number one, he violated maleches. Maleches Korea. Number two, he violated Maleches Tofer. Or in the other case, I gave you, he erases two letters and then he writes two letters. He'd have to bring one Karban Chatas for erasing two letters, because it was a Mechik Al Manas Letaken. And then he would have to bring another Karban Chatas for writing the two letters and violating Maleches Kosev. Okay. So now we get to the Gemara itself, Veriminu. Okay, we're fast forwarding to the Gemara. And Veriminu means what?
Contradiction.
A contradiction. Excellent. Now, in this case of Reminhu, the Gemara is about to quote a Braisa. And as you know, very often the Gemara will ask for Reminhu by positing a contradiction between two Mishnayos. But this case is not that. This is the more, shall I say, common case where the Gemara finds a stira in a Braisa. What does it say in the Braisa? Koreh b'chamoso u'be'evlo v'almeso chayef. There are two major changes here. Who notices two changes?
The addition of the...
Excellent. The addition of the word u'be'evlo, correct. And then b'chayef instead of patur. Then the Braisa gives us another piece of information. V'afal pisha mechalos ha-shabbos. Even though he's chayef for violating the Shabbos through this kriya, nevertheless, yatza yidei kriya. He has fulfilled his obligation of kriya. Obviously, the word meso, then according, in this brisa at least, I don't know about our Mishnah, but in this brisa, what does the word meso mean?
Krov.
Right, one of the Zion krov. Because otherwise it would make no sense for the brisa to say yatza yidei kriya. If it's not a relative of his, in this case not one of the seven close relatives, so what do you mean Yotzi de Kriya? He fulfilled his obligation to Kriya. There is no obligation to Kriya except for the Zion Krov. Now, in the past, we've discussed a different dimension of the sugi, which is not for us today. I just want to point out that you might get into this on your own, and that is, why does this Braisa feel compelled to answer a question which seems to be totally off the beaten path here, and that is whether he was Yotze Yedei Kriya? I mean, that belongs to Hilchas Avelis. The subject of this Braisa is Hilchas Shabbos. Okay, maybe certain Braises, you know, combine two different areas of Halacha. And the Braisa is telling me two different Chidushim. One in terms of Hilchas Shabbos, that he's Chayev, and the other is that he is Yotze Yedei Chovas Kriya, if you want to learn Hilchas Kriya. Yeah, what do you say, Chaim Hillel? Excellent. So that's the sugya here of Mitzvah Baba Vera. And I'll just say this very quickly. Maybe we'll get a chance to see the Yushalmi. The Yushalmi says that Mitzvah Baba Vera applies to Gzela. When you steal something, then you want to use it for a mitzvah like a lulav. But it doesn't apply to a case where you did an action, and that action is at the same time, simultaneously, both an avera and a mitzvah. Like, for example, kriya here. Kriya is now a melechet Shabbos, and at the same time, it's a mitzvah of kriya lames. So they overlap here. So you would have said, well, that's also mitzvah above avera. Yushalmi explains that mitzvah above avera is a two-stage process, meaning you did an avera of gzela, now you want to use that gzela as a cheftishal mitzvah. That you can't do. But if two actions or accomplished, or one action but with two accomplishments, and one is a mitzvah, one is a vera, the mitzvah stands unto itself. Again, that's at least an hour discussion, which we're not going to get into now, because I just want to focus on Mekalkil. That's our subject for today, Mekalkil and Shabbos, and what's the status of Mekalkil. So now, Rabosai, we have a stira. On the one hand, the Mishnah says that HaKoreh B'chamosav El Meso is Potter. On the other hand, the Braisa says that Koreh b'chamosu be'evlo v'almeso is chayef. Lo kasha, says the Gemara, I can reconcile that contradiction. Ha b'meis di day, ha b'meis di alma. In other words, our Mishnah is talking about a case of meis di alma. What does meis di alma mean? He's not a relative, right? What do you say? The Alma, from the Velt, you know, it's from the world. He's not one of your relatives. If he's not one of your relatives, then your act of kriya is considered what?
Destructive.
Makapil, exactly, destructive. But the Bryce is talking about a case of mace didet. It's one of his relatives. That's not Makalkil. Why is that not Makalkil? Because he has a mitzvah of kriya. Interesting. He has a mitzvah of kriya.
Maybe mace shalom could mean that he's become responsible. The possessive shalom, like he's the chevra kaddisha guy. He got the assignment.
Right. But the only thing is, well,
he was machmir on himself and did kriya when he wasn't chayav on Shabbat.
Oh, wait a second. You're asking a different question, Shmuel. Is there a chiyuv kriya on Shabbat? That's an interesting question. My assumption is right now that the chiyuv kriya is not a time-bound mitzvah. In other words, it applies as soon as one of his relatives never passes on, he's chayuv in kriya. You might argue, Shmuel, that we should sort of remove Shabbos from the constellation of time as far as the chiyuv kriya is concerned. But that would complicate me at this point. So let's just go simple. Let's assume that there's a mitzvah of kriya, and it's Mesdi Day, so he's chayuv in kriya. And the Braisa went out of its way to point out that he was Yotze Yedei Mitzvah's Kriya, even though it was Shabbos. And therefore, we don't define his act of Kriya as Makalkel, but rather we see it as Misakin. So why does the Braisa say that he's Chaya for this Kriya? And the answer is because he's Makayim, his Mitzvah of Kriya. When you're Makayim, your Mitzvah of Kriya, then that's considered a constructive act, because insofar as the Torah commanded you in Kriya, that's what you have to do. So we don't see it as a destructive act. In the Mishnah, on the other hand, we're talking about Mace the Alma. It's not his mess. Again, the Gemara is going to point out that the Mishnah doesn't say that. The Mishnah says Al Mesa. But again, before we get to that Gemara,
Why could he possess it if he's the Chevra Kedisha guy?
Again, Chevra Kaddisha is not in charge of Kriya. Chevra Kaddisha's job is to bury the dead. Now, it could be that... It could be that the Chevra Kaddisha takes upon themselves, you know, some special responsibility to oversee and make sure that everything is done properly, the Kriya is done properly on the part of the Avelim, the Kvur is done, and again, here I would say that the Chevra Kaddisha represents the Avelim. But what I want you to focus your attention on here, Rabosai, is the following. How does the Gemara reconcile the stira between our Mishnah and the Braisa? The Mishnah is talking about a case, and it all depends upon the following. Is there a mitzvah of Kriya or is there not a mitzvah of Kriya? And what's the answer?
Has to be there is a mitzvah of Kriya.
In the Mishnah, no, I want you to say it like this. In the Mishnah, is there a mitzvah of Kriya? Is there not a mitzvah of Kriya? In the Braisa, is there a mitzvah of Kriya? Is there not a mitzvah of Kriya? What's the answer?
In the Mishnah,
yeah. In the Mishnah, there's no mitzvah of Kriya. And if there's no mitzvah of Kriya, then it becomes purely Mekalkel, and therefore he's potter. In the Braisa, there's a mitzvah of Kriya, and the mitzvah of Kriya converts the Mekalkel into a Misakin. Now you would ask me the following question, why does the mitzvah of Kriya convert something, transform something which in and of itself is destructive into something constructive? And apparently the fact that the Torah obligates you to do this act, that itself makes it constructive. But we have to figure that out. You know, that in the physical universe he's obviously destroying the beggar. You know, the beggar is not worth a darn after this. But in the halachic universe, Al-Pidin, since he obtains a Kiyum HaMitzvah of Kriya, that transforms his act into upgrades his act into an act of what? Of Misakin.
But an oven needs to have a Kriya.
It needs to have what? I didn't hear you.
I don't know if the din is Mistama, the din is on the Gavra, not on the Chifetz, but Avil, his clothes when torn are now proper.
Okay, so that's complicated. This is a big Chakira and Hilchas Kriya, whether the Mitzvah Kriya is just a Maisa Kriya or wearing a Beged Karua.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you want, we can talk about that.
One, huh?
Yeah. The Mishmeres Chaim, I don't know if you're familiar with that Sefer, it's a wonderful Sefer. So his I think in his first piece, or one of his first pieces on Avelis, he has this Chakira. You know, what's... what's the deal with the beged karua? Is it that the avil has to wear a beged karua, or just he has to do kriya? Once he did kriya, he's pot. Our meaning is to be machmir that the avil wear a beged karua. But we have to. That would be a sugya unto itself, and it's really very relevant to sugya because, you know, you can begin to understand why the Kiyum Mitzvah's Kriya converts the Kriya into a Misakin if the only Beged he's allowed to wear is the Beged Karua. So that's his Beged. He was Misakin the Beged for him. That's why I think Chaim Hill means the same.
He has to tear it himself, right?
He has to tear it. That's number one. But that's not the be-all and the end-all of the Mitzvah. That's only the be-all, but not the end-all. We need, number one, that he rips the Beged, and number two, that he wears a ripped garment.
It's
if that be the case,
it prepares
makes it into Matakin. Correct. It's what we call a matir. It allows him to wear the beggar. So that would be fascinating. You know, but that's more the Kriya dimension of this sugya, and I really want to focus on the Makalkil dimension of the sugya.
It would really be a shiloh. A lot of people, though, later their parents died not far from each other, and you already have one beggar that's karua for Horim. Right?
Okay, then. Now, what I want to study with you is Rashi. Okay? Rashi says the following. Do you see the second? Actually, it's the third Rashi. During Chavrusa learning, we'll go back to the previous Rashis. But Ha b'meis di de. Do you see such a Rashi? Okay. Hab meisti de. Second. Brisa diktoni chayev the meisti de shechayev lekroa ol filkach kriya di de lav kilkul hu ella tikun. So Rashi says here that the brisa that says Yechayev is talking about a case of Meisti Day, and therefore, since it's Meisti Day, he's obligated in Kriya, and therefore, Hilchos says Rashi, this is not called Kilkul, Ela Tikun. So Rashi says that the fact that he's obligated in Kriya, that converts the Kriya into a, from a Mekalkel into a Metakin. Okay. Now let's go back to the Gemara for a second, and we'll go back to Rashi in just a minute. The Gemara says, "Va meso ketani." How could you say that the Mishnah is talking about a case of mes the alma, and it's not a relative of his? The fact that the Mishnah used the word possessive, that lechora indicates that it's one of his relatives. So the Gemara answers, Li olam b'meis di day ubahanach de lav b'nei avelus minhu. It's a relative, but it's a relative that doesn't generate a chiyuv of avelus and a mitzvah of kriya, meaning it's that middle category, you remember. It's not a zar, you know, somebody who's alien or foreign, not related at all. It's not one of the Zion close relatives, but it's in that middle category of a relative, but not one of the seven close relatives. Now, what I find a little bit odd here is that if there's no mitzvah of kriya, why does the Mishnah bother telling me that it's meis didei, meiso? I mean, in this case of meis didei, it would seem to me, is identical to meis di alma. Is anybody able to identify or empathize with my problem here?
Because you might think...
Oh, excellent.
That because it's a crop, but it's not one of the Zion,
there's more people in Korea.
He said something brilliant, you know.
You might think...
But you're high.
You're high, even though there's no...
Okay, excellent. Now, I want you to focus on this question, Yirmiyo. When you say you might think you're chayev, because it is a cousin, what would you be chayev?
Not chayev for Kriya. You might think you're chayev for Shabbos, because there's a... even though there's not a chayev of kriya, you might think the five Shabbos because it's a pseudo relative.
I like that phrase, a pseudo relative.
And then comes the Balaam.
Yeah, let's take a look at Rashi. Can we take a look at Rashi, Rabosai?
Yeah.
Rashi says, "Vaha meso nami ketoni b'masnisa." The word meso appears both in the Braisa and in the Mishnah. And now you're telling me, well, there are two different categories of relatives. Li olam b'mesti de. You're right. You've convinced me. The Mishnah is also talking about one of his relatives. Oh. Now Rashi adds three words, and I'd like you to underline those three words. Shemutal olav lekovro. So during Chavrusa time today, this is the first Maror Mokom on the list of work for today. I want you to focus on those three words, mutal olav lekovro, and see if you could hook those words into the next part of Rashi. Rashi says, Umiu Bahanach the Lav Bene Avelus Ninhu Di Enon Me Osan Hamurim Viparshas. Okay, I would add Emor al HaKohanim, just for my own clarification. Aviv Imo Bno Bito Achoso Achiv Achoso. So Rashi says that Mutal Olav Lekovro, but nevertheless, it's not one of those that are Bnei Avelus, which are the seven relatives listed in Parshas Emor. So that's what I want you to work on today during Chavrusa.
Why did Rashi left out Yishtali?
I think if you take a look at the Chaf over here, I don't know, it's a little small for my eyes. Is there a Chaf there and he adds the word Ishto? I think it was just a Girsa issue, if I'm not mistaken. You should have it on yours, I think. Are you missing Ishto?
Yeah.
Okay, good point. I don't know. Okay, Rabosai. Let's now pick up the sugya that we want to pick up today. Everything that we've discussed until now to reconcile the contradiction between the Mishnah and the Braisa was focused on what? Korea al Meso, correct? But we skipped something, did we not? What about Korea Bechamoso? So that's where the Gemara is going to pick up now. And this you'll see, we're skipping a whole sugya here in Avelus, if anybody wants to learn what's the din of Kriya on a Chacham, on an Adam Kosher.
Does that mean Korea and Anger?
Yeah, that's what we want to pick up now. So you see on the right side of your page, just so we'll be on the same line, Lo Tzricha, Tosis Dibra Maska Lo Tzricha. If you could drop down below that about three lines.
Sorry, just to clarify.
Yes, please.
We have here in the photocopies you made for us the Pesukim that Rashi refers to in Parshas Emor. And in the Pesukim it mentions he. So
there's
Ishtar is not mentioned in the source
passage. Well, the first one is Sheira Korvelov is
Ishtar.
And Rashi omits that. That was your point, and I don't know the answer to that. I thought that it was a Girsa issue, but I can't see it in my text.
Sheira Korvelov
is Ishtar. She'ero zu ishto.
Okay. No, I was just going to say, because the lashon of Chayav Lekovro, Suvis mentions that that's in one of the few that the husband takes upon himself when he marries his wife.
It's only Darabonon, you mean? I'll tell you what it is on a Doraisa level in the Pasuk there that you quoted. That's only what's called a Chovas HaGuf. That's he has to bury his wife. The Ksuba generates a Chovas Mammon that the Torah doesn't recognize. That means, let's say he's in Africa, you know, and she never died here in Yerushalayim, then he has a Chovas Mammon to pay all the burial bills. And that was a very expensive undertaking. So that's the Rabbanon, that's Takanis Ksuba, but the Doraisa is that he has to physically bury her if he only can. So let's say if he was an old person and he's just weak and ailing,
right.
You know, he can't physically bury her, he's going to have to sign a check. That's ksuba. Okay, so if you look below Tosis Dibra Masa Lo Tzricha, you'll see a line that begins Delo, and towards the end of that line, Tenach. So again, if you have a pen, it's always good to underline that. I have an extra pen here on the table, if anybody needs it. Tenach. What does the word Tenach mean? Tenach literally means, that's fine, you know, it's nochadaiti, you know, you've calmed me down in terms of the contradiction of meso. And now I can reconcile that there are two categories of meso. The Mishnah is addressing meso, which is meis didei, shemutal al v'kovro, as Rashi says, whereas the Brisa is mentioned is addressing meso, which is one of the Zion Krov. That's tenach, that's fine. So you've reconciled the contradiction as far as meso is concerned. But if you look at the Brisa, like the Mishnah that came before it, has another category, and that's korea b'chamoso. El chamoso achamoso kasha. In the Mishnah it says that a korea b'chamoso is potur. In the Brisa it says that korea b'chamoso is chayav. How do we reconcile that? Says the Gemara, Chamoso, Achamoso, Nami, Lo Kasha. Now, both say, here's where the sugi gets very interesting and very, very challenging. Lo Kasha, Ha Rabbi Yehuda, Ha Rabbi Shimon. So I'm going to give it away now at the beginning just so that we'll just interpret the Gemara. The Mishnah itself reflects the Shita of Shimon. And the Brisa reflects the Shita Rabbi Yehuda. So now notice, until this point in the Gemara, we never had to introduce what we call Tanon, meaning this Tana, this Mishnah reflects this Tana, this Mishnah reflects that Tana. We were assuming that the Mishnah and the Brisa are all one Tana, except that this is case A and this is case B. Now we're saying no, we can't reconcile the Mishnah and the Brisa by interpreting cases. Clearly both the Mishnah and the Brisa are addressing the same exact case. The Mitziyut, the reality is the same, but we can only reconcile by saying that the Mishnah reflects the Shita of Rav Shimon and the Brisa reflects the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Now, who's Rabbi Shimon and who's Rabbi Yehuda? I don't mean, you know, I'm not talking about a biography here, but what is Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda have to do with our Mishnah of Mekalkel? So the Gemara says the following. Ha Rabbi Yehuda di Amar Malacha Shein Etzricha Legufa Chayav Alei. Ha Rabbi Shimon di Amar Malacha Shein Etzricha Legufa Potter Alei. Now, at this point in the sugya, the Gemara is referring to an old machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. And if you take a look in the Mesoras HaShas, he'll tell you where you could find this. For example, I think he says Sandaf Ayin Gimel. Yeah? But there's a whole list of sugyas in Shas, especially in Masechta Shabbos, where this argument comes up. And Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that a Malacha Shein Etzricha Legufa is Chayav. And somehow that's going to explain why in the Brisa Korea B'chamoso is Chayav. So again, Rabbi Yehuda, at this point we don't know very much, but at least we know the technicalities of the Gemara, what we call the logistics. Now what it is the following, that the Brisa says you're Chayav in the case of Korea B'chamoso, and Rabbi Yehuda says you're Chayav in the case of Molocha Shein Etzricha Legufa, and both are, if I can use the term, interdependent. In the Gemara's language, that would be Haba HaTalia. On the other hand, the Mishnah reflects the Shita. The Mishnah says that HaKorei B'chamos is Patur. Reb Shimon holds that Malacha Shein Etzricha Legufa is Patur. And the Mishnah itself reflects the Shita of Rabbi Shimon. So both sides, now at this point we have to pay up two debts. One debt is a little easier for me, the other one is almost impossible to pay up. The first debt is, what is the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon all over the place in Masechta Shabbos about Malach Shein Tzricha L'Gufa? And that I can help you with. The interdependence, I don't know if I can help you with. Meaning, why is that machlokas relevant to Korea B'chamasa? You see, if you would ask me intuitively, what issue, without even getting into details, but what is the general issue that the Mishnah and the Braisa are battling about? What concept are they defining in two different ways? And that generates the debate as to whether you're chayev in Korea B'chamasa or you're part of a Korea B'chamasa. What would be two definitions of what concept? Can you help me out here, Tzvi? Mekalkin. That would have been my intuitive. In other words, I would have liked the Gemara to have shown me that there's a machlokes between one tan and another tan about how to define mekalkel, and the nafkamina is going to be korea b'chamasa. But instead, the Gemara stretches its arm out to a whole different discussion, which is called melacha shein tzricha l'gufa. Our Mishnah, on the face of it, is not discussing melacha shein tzricha l'gufa. Our Mishnah is discussing the case of what? Of mekalkel. Is korea b'chamasa mekalkel? Is it not mekalkel? Okay, so give me two definitions of mekalkel. One definition of mekalkel is a broad scope definition, and would include even korea b'chamasa. And another definition of mekalkel is much more narrow in its scope, and it excludes the case of korea b'chamasa. That would have made me a happy camper. But instead, the Gemara goes off on a tangent, l'chora, and tells me that this machlokes, which is going to bear on korea b'chamasa, and that machlokes is whether melacha shein tzricha l'guf is chayev or melacha shein tzricha l'guf is pot. That's difficult. But before we get to that, let's first pay up our easy debt. What is melacha shein tzricha l'guf?
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
What's the connection between Malachash? Let me ask in a different way.
No, I like that. I like what you started.
What's the connection between Malachash and Tzricha L'Gufa and Korea and Meso Krov and Eino Krov?
No connection, L'Chor, at all.
So then why is Rabbi Shimon, who authored the Mishnah, and Rabbi Shimon authored the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda authored the Baraisa? There must be some connection because they're two different.
Okay.
Tanayim. They're two different opinions, and they were talking. One was talking about Meso Shein.
Well, let me ask you this. I don't know if you're willing to accept this. You know, logistically, I don't know. Maybe what the Gemara is saying at this point. And by the way, I'm not disagreeing with anything you said, Yerviel, but I just want to play the devil's advocate, so to speak. Maybe what the Gemara is saying at this point is that as far as Korea al Meso is concerned, that's both Rav Shimon and Rav Yehuda. Just that the Mishnah is talking about a case of Meso, but not one of the Zayin Krovim. The Bryce is talking about a case of one of the Zayin Krovim. Korea mechamaso, that's already... Shall I say, that's already sucked into the Mishnah, but that's already a different issue entirely. That issue of Korea Mechamaso is an issue that touches on Molach HaShem Tzricha L'Gufa and Rav Shimon and Rav Yehuda. Now, logistically, it's not very smooth. It's a little bit choppy, if you know what I mean. Because what we're saying is, let's split the Mishnah up into two parts, in a sense. One part is Korea al-Meso, and that's according to everybody, whether you're of Shimon or of Yehuda, and the Bryce is talking about one case, and the Mishnah is talking about another case. And then we have another issue in the Bryce and the Mishnah, and that's about Korea mechamaso, and that's of Yehuda or of Shimon.
Okay.
It's a bit choppy because, as you pointed out very well, you know, if Rav Shimon authored our Mishnah, then he's probably saying something about Korea al-Meso, not just something about Korea Mechamoso. And if Rav Yehuda authored the Braisa, he's saying something about Korea Mechamoso and about Korea al-Meso. And that's going to be Rashi's, shall I say, PhD thesis here in this sugya. Rashi's going to work very hard to figure out how the Gemara now is backtracking on its original position, and Korea al-Meso depends upon Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon. Whereas, you know, the flow of the Gemara seems to indicate that Korea al-Meso, the Gemara didn't need Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon. The Gemara only needs Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon for Korea Mechamoso. So Rashi's going to try to smooth that out with a whole shtickle Torah, as we say, a whole new insight here. Okay. But before we get to Rashi, so let's talk in general about Malacha Sheinu Tzricha L'Gufa. So here's the case. You have something in your private domain, in your Rishus HaYochid, that has to get out. It has to get out, meaning you have to clean the house of that object. It smells, it's whatever, it's got a foul odor, whatever the case may be. Where are you going to put it? Outside of Rishut HaRabim. Where does it go in Rishut HaRabim? You couldn't care less. It's irrelevant to you. You just got to get it out of here.
That's
Malacha Sheinu Tzricha L'Gufa. So Reb Shimon says, wait a minute. You know what Malachas Hotzah is? Malachas Hotzah requires three kavanas. Kavanas akira, meaning picking up the object. Shall we say, uprooting it from its place. In this case, in Rishus HaYochid. Number two, kavanas havaras rishuyos. The kavana to bring it into a different domain. And number three, kavanas hanocha. That you want to put it in a certain place. In our situation, where something has a foul odor, you have kavanas akira, you have kavanas havaras rishus, but you don't have kavanas hanocha. So Rav Shimon says, if you don't have kavanas hanocha, you are missing a chunk, an essential part of Malechas Hotzah, and your kavan is not for Malechas Hotzah.
So it's like you could throw something out the window or something like that.
Well, let's say you had something in your house that you just had to throw out the window because here it's just bothering you.
You don't care if it landed or where it landed.
Exactly. Just get it out of here. So what's the classical case of Malacha Sheinu Tzricha L'Gufa? That's a case we have a corpse, a dead body in the house. Well, okay, that's as far as mukt is concerned. But again, what we're talking about is where he did hotzah, and he took the mess out of the Rishus HaYochid, out of the house, and he places it somewhere in Rishus HaRab. That makes it easier for him to live in his house for the balance of Shabbos. Okay, again, there are a million questions that could flood your mind, but try not to get distracted. Just focus on this. Rav Shimon says that since you have no particular place that you want to lay down the gufa shalmes, that's called a malacha sheinu tzricha l'gufa. You don't have kavanas hotzah, your kavanas in the malacha is incomplete until you want to place it somewhere. That's called hanach. Your hanacha here is irrelevant to you. You just want to get it out of here. That's a malacha sheinu tzricha l'gufa. Comes along Rabbi Yehuda and he says yechayev. In that very case, yechayev. Why? Because you're benefiting from hotzah. And since you desire hotzah in a more general sense, that ratzon, that kavana, that intention for hotzah is enough to generate a chiyuv of melecha Shabbos. As opposed to, for example, a case of what's called, again, I don't want to confuse you, Dovah Sheinu Miskaven, where he had no intention at all for the Malacha. Here he had full intention for the Malacha, from soup to nuts, from A to Z, all the parts of the Malacha he wanted. Again, you want to go into specifics. Did he want it this way? Did he want it that way? Was he so careful about where the Hanacha would be? Rabbi Yehuda says that's irrelevant. You can be Chayev because you had Kavana for what we call Hotzah.
In other words, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you just have to have kavana for the entire thing, as Rabbi Shimon splits it up into its compartments, and if one's missing, you're patur.
Right.
But they're both called melecha Sheinu Tzricha L'Gufa.
So Sheinu Tzricha L'Gufa means he doesn't need the guf hamalacha. What does it mean, the guf hamalacha? He doesn't need the essence of the malacha, the way it was done in its perfect form. And you know, there's something called the ideal malacha. You know, I don't know if you're familiar with Plato. You know, Plato talks about the ideal. You know, the ideal malacha, and then you have a kavana for the maisa malacha, but not for the ideal malacha. Now, the ideal malacha includes not only the maisa malacha, but it also includes what we call the tachlis hamalacha, tachlit hamalacha, which means the purpose and the goal. How do we define the goal and the purpose of the malacha? Before we ask him the question whether he had in mind that he was motivated for that goal, that ideal, the answer is we have to find some sort of barometer to define the ideal malacha. What's that barometer? Okay, that's it appears in the Torah in that context, but what's the context in which that pasuk Melechus Machshavos appears? Building what?
Based on English.
Right, the Mishkan, to be technical about it. So the Mishkan gives me the ideal malacha. Now, when they moved things in the Mishkan, which is the crushim, you know, those beams, they had to put the beams in a certain place. Okay, they moved the beams during the Masos in the Midbar from Agola to Agola, from one wagon to another. So they had to transfer from one wagon to another wagon. And they had a specific place in mind, X, that's where it had to go to. So Reb Shimon says, the Mishkan now serves to define the paradigm malacha and its purpose. If you do anything less than that, you're lacking kavana savalacha. Although again, you had kavana for this Maisa, otherwise it's Dovah Shein Miskafe. Like Dovah Shein Miskafe means I wanted to do X and I did Y, you know, something like that. So I never had kavana for Y. Here I had kavana for the malacha from beginning to end. But not for the purpose for which the malacha was done in the Mishkan. That's called Eina Tzricha Legufa. I don't need the Gufa malacha. And the Gufa malacha is defined by the purpose of the malacha in the Mishkan, which means to take it out of here and place it here. I'm not interested, it doesn't bother me one way or the other where it goes to. I don't have to place it down in a specific place. But I had, you know, so I'm lacking, according to Rav Shimon, that kavana legufa shel malacha. So again, the gufa shel malacha is like the paradigmic malacha and its purpose, its goal, as set by the Mishkan. And if, says Rav Shimon, I'm missing that paradigmic kavana because I'm not interested in the purpose of the malacha, the taklit malacha, the way it was achieved in the Mishkan, that makes me into a malacha she'ena tzricha legufa, because gufa means that paradigm purpose of the Mishkan. Comes along Rabbi Yehud and he says, no, what we're going to learn from the Mishkan is a kavana for a certain maisa malacha. The action is going to be defined by the Mishkan. In the Mishkan there was Akira, there was Havaras Rishuyos, and then there was Hanach. That's exactly what you have to do. If you had kavana to do that, I'm not going to ask you why you wanted to do it. Did you have in mind the ultimate goal as was set in the Mishkan? It's Eino Tzrich Legufa, and you are Chai of that, Rabbi Yehud. Now, what does this have to do with Korea Al Mesa? Excuse me, with Korea Michamasa? That I can't answer you right now.
You have to find a case.
Well, it could be Rabbi Yehud. He's like Machmir.
Yeah, no, that you're right. You're right. Now, Shmuel, you're definitely moving us along the line. Rav Yud is the Machmir, Rav Shimon is the Mekil. So our Mishnah, therefore, would reflect Rav Shimon as a Mekil.
That's not good.
No, that's good. But I'm just saying, it's good, but it's not. It's necessary, but not sufficient. Okay. Meaning, I still need more here. Okay, so, good. So, we're going to find every Reb Shimon in the books that's Mekil, and we're going to say, well, he's the author of our Mishnah, the Korea B'chamaso is Potter. And we're going to find every Reb Yehuda under the sun that's Machmir, and we're going to say, well, he's the author of our Mishnah, because our Brisa says Korea B'chamaso is Chai. You know, that's not fair. You know, there's got to be some sort of more intrinsic connection between these concepts. Let's look in Rashi. I don't think Rashi is going to help us. Yeah, I don't think. I don't know. Harab Yehuda. You have the Rashi? Umeso ameso hachinami. Ah. Now Rashi is addressing your point. Let's go back to meso ameso. And Rashi says hachinami. Same thing. The same answer. Harab Yehuda, Harab Shimon. Havamotzi literutze. David, the Gemara could have fleshed this out as another answer. You know, we started with Meso Al Meso. To reconcile that, we introduced Mesti Day and Mesti Alma and the whole discussion about Avelus. Why did the Gemara just jump right to the punchline here? Namely what? Horav Yehuda, Rav of Shimon.
Actually, both Mishnah and the Baraita start with Chamaso. So why did the Gemara skip to Meso?
Right. That's also very strange. You know, here, according to Rashi, the main answer is to reconcile Chamaso and Chamaso, introducing Rav Shimon Rav Yehuda, and that's going to answer Meso Al Meso as well, and yet the Gemara skips Chamaso and Chamaso. Very strange. He says, El Meikara. Ah. The Meikara means from the start of the process, right? From the get-go, there was sort of like a vested, there was almost like an agenda that the Gemara had in mind. Ahadar means he's working very hard. Lukimnu kechad tana. If we can get away with one tana, that's a heck of a lot better But why? By the way, what's so terrible? Not terrible, but why? Why do we have an intuitive inhibition against two tanoim?
We want to reduce one to disadvantage.
Well, okay, that's true. But also because
that should be according to only one.
Because again, if the Mishnah is authored by one Tana and the Brice is authored by a different Tana, each Tana has a different Shita, then what's missing here, both in the Mishnah and the Brice? The names of the Tana. You know, you get the impression what's called a Stam Mishnah or a Stam Brisa, that, you know, that there's no debate about it. You know, so the Gemara initially had vested interest to try to see maybe we could reconcile the Mishnah and the Brisa by introducing two different scenarios rather than two different Tanoim, because if this is a Machlokas Tanoim, there should have been some whisper of a hint about it. He says, El Mikara Hadar Lukimnu Kimchad Tana. In other words, if it's very interesting, Rashi's saying that if your agenda is to interpret that both the Mishnah and the Brisa are authored by the same Tana, it could only be Rabbi Yehuda.
That's a bad answer.
And that's fine, and that's why the Brice and the Mishnah didn't have to mention Tanoim, because it's all the same Tana of Yehuda.
Okay, but it's exceptional, right?
And well, I'm not sure if it's exceptional, but let's assume that we pass, for argument's sake now, again, I'm not getting into, let's assume we pass, and we accept the Shita of Yehuda, Melach Shen Tzrich L'Gufa is Chayav, then the Brice and the Mishnah are both referring to a Melach Shen Tzrich L'Gufa. And why does the Mishnah say Al Meso Yepatur? The answer is because it's not his mess; it's a relative, but he's not chayav in kvura, and therefore it becomes mekalki. Now Rashi now adds another point: that where do we find Malachas and Tzrichel Gufa? Kimotzias Hames. Now here there's a dalet here. Let's just see what this dalet is. It's a bach. He says the Perek HaMatznia. Oh, he's the Bach is giving you a Mara Mokom.
What is it?
Motzia Sames. Okay, I don't know. We'll have to get back to this. Which Tosfos are you looking at?
No, they want to send the Dalet in brackets and the Bach says Divrei HaMaskil.
Hor of Yehuda. Bechule b'motzi es hames. No, I think b'motzi es hames here. Oh, right, b'motzi es hames. Very good, b'motzi es hames. Right. See, the last few words in Rashi says in our text it says kimotzi es hames. He has instead b'motzi es hames. You know, it's bimotzi es hames means, I think he's telling you it's in a certain sugya which is located in Perek HaMatznia. Back on daf, what does it say, the Tzadi Dali? Okay. So let's just summarize as we're about to close the shiur, and then I want to leave you with some Mara Makomos. I gave you the Tosfos Rib to prepare, which you should have a photocopy of. We have the following. We have a double stira, a double contradiction between the Mishnah and the Brisa. One contradiction regard to Korea b'meso, Korea al-meso. The Brisa says Yechai, the Mishnah had said Yepatur. We have another machlokes, another stira l'chora between the Mishnah and the Brisa in the case of Korea b'chamoso. In the first case, the Gemara reconciles that stira by differentiating between two cases of meso. One is mes didei, which Rashi says is lav b'nei avelus ninhu. He doesn't have a mitzvah of avelus, and therefore remains mekalkel. The Brice, on the other, is talking about mes didei, where there is a mitzvah of kriya, and that converts the kriya from a kilkul into a tikkun. As far as reconciling the second contradiction, namely with regard to Korea b'chamoso, The Gemara says, Ha, Rav Shimon, Ha, Rav Yehuda, meaning our Mishnah says you're potter because it reflects the sheet of Rav Shimon, that's Malach Shem Tzrich Lagufa potter. And the Braisa reflects the sheet of Rav Yehuda that Malach Shem Tzrich Lagufa is Chayov. We're left with two questions right off the bat. Question number one, Rashi says, Li olam b'meis di deshe mutal olav lekovro. That was the first thing I wanted you to look into. Secondly, we want to try to figure out the interdependence between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon in Malach Shen Tzrich Legufa and the Brice and the Mishnah regarding Korea b'chamosa. So those are the two things that we have so far. Now, what I need you to do for tomorrow, in Yirtzeh Hashem, if you can, is to continue in the Gemara itself, here on Daf Kuf Hei Amid Beis, until you get to Shir Hamalabim. Just 1 second. No. You know what? Until Rav Shimon ben Pasi. Let me just point this out to you. If you're counting the wide lines, so it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It's down to the 7th of the wide line, up until but not including Rav Shimon ben Pasi. And let me know if you want me to write this out for you. I could do that. Otherwise, I'd love you to write it yourself and save me that hassle. And then at that point, you turn you flip the page to the other side, and that's Kuvav Amud Aleph. And you'll see on the third line, the two dots, Kol HaMekalkel and Peturim. And see if you can get up to Veha Anan Tnan, which is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, until the eighth line down, Veha Anan Tnan. Now, although all the Rashis are important here, I would like you to emphasize the following Rashis, and I'm going to take them a little bit out of order, if that's okay with you. If you count down from the top, we're on again, Kuvav Hamad Aleph, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 lines down from the top, there's a Rashi, B'Tsarech. If you could focus your attention on that Rashi, and then go back to Rashi Dibra Maschil Chutz, which is on the third line down from the top of the page. Chutz Michovel. And then on the fourth line from the top, Mavir. Those are the three, I think, most critical Rashis that I want you to look at. And at that point, to take out the Tosus Rid, which is this photocopy that I gave you. This comes from Bar Ilan. And to start from line 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, line 7. And I bolded it. You see where it says, V'imtim Tzolomer Mishnah. And see if you can cover at least the first, I didn't get a chance to bold this, the end part here, but about 10 lines down. So that I didn't get a chance to do. You give me 5 minutes during Seder time, and believe that, or I'll tell you. But the main thing is to start with the Imtim Tzolomer Mishnah, and the first 10 lines here are critical. And this Tosus Rid, I think, is going to shed a whole new light on the sugya on Daf Kuf Vav Amud Aleph that I asked you to prepare for tomorrow. That starts again on the third line, called Makalkal and Peturim, and then it goes on to Tani. Rabbi Avo Kame de Rabbi Yochanan. And takes you down till Va'anan Tnan. And believe it or not, those few lines of the Gemara on Daf Kuf Vav are absolutely profound. I mean, it looks like, what's the big deal? Three lines of Gemara. The Gemara quotes Rabbi Avo, then it quotes Rabbi Yochanan, and that's it. But there's so much here in this Rabbi Avo and Rabbi Yochanan, just in those few lines of the Gemara, that I think that's going to that's going to occupy our minds for the bulk of tomorrow's Shia, especially if we get to the Tosus Rid, which is my hope that we'll get to it for tomorrow. Okay then? Now again, I don't know what's Matsui, what's real, and I can just tell you what's Matsui would be that either the four of you learn together now for the bulk of the Seder. You have to go, so maybe the three of you gentlemen can learn together. And then hopefully more people will be coming. I know that Ben Goldfarb wants to join us. He's in the hospital. We wish him a Fuah Shleima. Today's Shia was dedicated for a Fuah Shleima to two individuals. I just want to mention
Shashenda
Basleya and Ben. Okay, Ben, we don't have his official name.
Yes. His arm, he broke his arm.
Well, not sure. I know that he had trouble with his arm. He didn't go into details about what the surgery is.
He broke his arm and has, I guess they're putting a plate.
Okay. Oh, wow.
I don't know.
Put a plate.
Binyamin Ben Elishen.
Binyamin Ben Elishen. Okay, so Fuah Shleima. And if there are any questions now, I'll take questions. And if not,
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Rabbi, can I ask a question?
Please.
Do you have time?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm still back on Malacha Shane Sikhra Gufo. So Gufo meaning the Kavana for the Malacha itself.
Right.
And because it doesn't mean to put it in a specific place, that's called Malacha Shane Sikhra Gufo, unlike the Mishkan.
Right.
Okay. So 1, 2, 3, Kavana Akira, Kavana Avara, both there, but Kavana Hanachas is not there. It's taken out, so it's not in the house. Maybe
well, if you don't mind, maybe during Shia I wasn't meticulous enough. He has Kavanas Hanacha, let's say, but not Hanacha B'makom Mesuyam.
So Kavana Hanachas being defined as to put it in a specific place.
B'makom Mesuyam.
Understood.
X.
You could have put it in a place that's Makom Patur, or it might not go all the way out if you didn't have Kavana.
Right. But let's say he had Kavana to put it in a Makom Chiyuv, somewhere in Rishus HaRabim, but from his point of view, if this is the Rishus HaRabim, he couldn't care less whether it's here in the south or here in the north, etc. He doesn't have Kavana for Hanacha the Makom Mesuyam.
He didn't finish deciding to do the Malacha.
Yeah, go ahead.
The question is, so two questions. First of all, Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda, they both agree this is called Malacha Shein Shlichut HaGufo. That's not what they're arguing about.
Right.
They're arguing about the Chiyuv. And
correct.
The one, whereas in the former, Rabbi Shimon says you're Pato because the Kavanah Hanachas isn't there.
Hanachah B'makom Mesuyam isn't there.
Hanachah B'makom Mesuyam, he says you're Pato because you need all three. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda, he doesn't care about all these different pieces.
He cares about Kavanah HaMaisa, if you could write that down. Kavanas Maisa HaMalacha. Now again, the Maisa HaMalacha comprises three parts.
Maisa HaMalacha. Okay, it comprises three parts.
And he had Kavanah for all three parts. Do you follow me? Let's
Kavanah to do all three parts.
Correct. But motivation, if you ask me what motivates him, when it comes to the third part, he's just motivated to just put it down. I don't care where. Not in a Makom Mesuyam. Mm-hmm. So he had Kavanah for the mice itself, meaning he did put it down. It wasn't like somebody clobbered him over the head and he put it down in a certain place. He was working with all, you understand? He was working with his full marbles, you know.
Rabbi Shimon, he cares about the end result, but the Makom Mesuyam. Rabbi Yehuda just cares about the initial motivation. The impetus.
Well, wait a second. I would say if you're using the word motivation, then Rabbi Shimon is on top here. Rabbi Shimon puts all the emphasis on motivation. And Rabbi Shimon is looking at the Malacha as a totality, which includes Hanachah B'makom Mesuyam, and he's asking the Osa Malacha, was he motivated to put it down in that Makom Mesuyam?
Whereas Rabbi Yehuda is saying, just the impetus to do it in the first place,
to do
as
it,
opposed
right.
to being machrich.
The intention as opposed to motivation. Meaning, according to Rabbi Yehuda, he intended to do the entire Malacha, from soup to nuts, from A to Z.
And what's the difference between intention and motivation?
Well, according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's no difference. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't even recognize this concept of motivation. Rabbi Shimon introduces the concept of motivation, and he says intention is not enough. You need also motivation. I have to ask you, what moves you? What's your ultimate goal? That's called in the language of the literature, it's called tachlit, if you could write that down. The tachlit. Tachlit means motivation, not literally. Tachlit literally means the goal. But your motivation vis-a-vis the goal.
So Rebbe,
it's like if you were playing soccer. I don't know, in England they have a different name for it. Football, they call it? Football. If you were playing football,
to go to school, the goal.
Correct. Your motivation is to get to the goal.
Right.
Rabbi Yehuda is saying, I don't care whether you're motivated to get to the goal. You got to the goal, and you put it on the goal, and you intended to get into the goal, but not to win the game, but you know.
Great, it's in.
It's in, right? It's in. So according to Rabbi Shimon, okay. Right. I thought you meant it's in the goal.
okay, so that's the difference. Okay.
Here, let me give you another example and see if you can analyze it. Let's say this is a field. Okay? Now, we dig holes in a field to plant.
Lizrok.
Yeah. This guy is not interested in planting. Why did he dig a hole? He needs the dirt. He's making a building somewhere. He needs to make bricks.
You know. He'd be hired for that. Rabbi Shimon would talk to him.
Right. Because Rabbi Shimon says the way they did so.
He doesn't care about the toughness.
Great. Rav Shimon puts all the emphasis on the tachlis. The tachlis of digging holes is real. He's not interested in that. He's not motivated to be Zoreh. He's the last farmer. He's as far away from being a farmer as you and I, let's say. Right? I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't say that. But yeah, maybe we are going to be farmers someday. But says Rav Shimon, if he's not digging the hole because he's motivated to sow,
yeah,
and plant, then that's not the way it was done in the Mishkan. In the Mishkan, they dug holes in order to plant, and from those plants, they made the rios and they made the you know the dyes, dye, the dyes, you know, to color the rios and so forth and so on. Rabbi Yehuda says, wait a minute, did he want to dig the hole? Did he intend to dig the hole? Yes. You're asking me, was he motivated to dig the hole for the purpose for which they dug holes in the Mishkan, namely for Zriya? The answer is no, since for you, I couldn't care less.
What's the difference between the Tachlis and Melechus Machsheves? Is it the same thing, or are they two different things? Is it?
I don't know. That you'll have to ask me in about 3 months from now.
Okay.
What do I mean? You're asking, it's like, I don't know if I had a mashal to give you. It's like, let's say you were taking a course in physics, and you know I would ask you quantum physics on the first day of class when you don't know the beans about physics. You know what I mean? So Melechus Machsheves is, you know, you got to know endless amounts of, you know, this is the largest Masechet in Shas, I think, if I'm not mistaken. It's between this and Bava Basra. So, like, maybe Bava Basra is large, I don't know. But if you're asking about Melechus Machsheves at this point, it's like premature, meaning I'm hoping that we'll build up to the point in which we can understand Melechus Machsheves. And there are probably as many opinions in what Melechus Machsheves means as there are in how to do Nanuim with the four minim on Sukkos, you know, which I once calculated 18 different opinions about how to do Nanuim, you know.
Oh.
And after a while, the blood vessels in your brain start popping, you know, like the electric waves. You know, like,
would it be fair to say there's about four or five factors that would make something this is one of them?
could be. I'm not sure. I'm not, honestly, and I mean this honestly, I'm not sure that Reb Shimon's Volkshein Sufukuva Potter has anything to do with Melechus Machsheves.
Yeah,
I'm not sure. I
correct myself. There are four or five similar factors that make a Malacha Kavana.
Right. It might be similar, but I would. In other words, initially, I would fight that. I would resist. I want to leave Melech Svarcheves for when I really need it. Now I don't think I need it.
Isn't it true that sometimes, though, the Halacha can be like Rav Shimon?
Yes. In many cases, the Halacha is like Rav Shimon.
Okay. I'm not sure that that's. All right. Right now, more